So from this point on, spoilers for the second half of Thor. So at a certain point, Loki sends the Destroyer, which is a piece of Asgardian tech, or a creature or magic or what have you. It's a creature that's a big metal thing that fires fire laser out of its face, basically. Is that pretty much an apt summary?
Yeah, I thought it was. It looked like flame or fire was welling up from within, and then like it's, I don't know, sunshade eyes roll backwards, and then it fires a laser beam or something.
I thought that thing was cool, actually, but it but they didn't really do much with it because it was rampaging through through basically a little old west town. I mean,
yeah, but the most it can do is just like a laser beam, like we've seen that in other movies.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, I think the trailer of this film attempted to sell us on the stakes of it, in which we see Thor saying, "You cannot kill an entire race," and we assume that race is humanity, but. It's not. It's the Frost Giants in this completely nonsensical twist where Loki turns the Rainbow Bridge into a weapon of mass destruction. But there's no threat to Earth, and therefore there's no reason for us to care what happens on Earth. Like, the only thing that is happening to Earth is Loki is trying to prevent his brother from returning to Asgard, and even that he's not willing to commit to. Like, he's not he doesn't want to kill his brother. He just wants to keep him away. Which, on the one hand, makes him slightly more interesting as a villain, but on the other hand, it makes none of the stuff that happens on Earth, including the terrible romance with Natalie Portman, mean anything.
Terrible romance and possible justification for future interaction between the worlds as the... can I go into the
bridge?
As the bridge between them is ultimately destroyed, and the final scene in the movie is the only way to save the Frost Giants is by destroying... the bridge, the connection from Asgard to any other realm.
Yeah, and that's true. And I mean, I think that if this were going to be followed up with Thor 2, I would actually think that was a good thing because, all right, no more Earth in the mix. We can just see the conflict play out in Asgard where it's actually going to be interesting. But there's no further reason for Earth to be involved in this, but we know it's going to because it's going to be followed up with the Avengers film. And in that sense, it's kind of hard to evaluate this as a standalone film because we don't yet know how it's going to fit into the mythology. But here's what we have as far as Thor's interaction with Earth. We have Natalie Portman, Jane Foster is the character's name, and her friend who is just kind of a cipher,
comic relief.
Yeah, only not funny. and basically, like, they think he's hot, like he's got the body of a Norse god slash supermodel, and I at least bought that they would probably want to hit that. But apart from that, and also I think Chris Hemsworth played him as this sort of bombastic but ultimately affable individual. Like he seems like an entertaining guy. In fact, I would say the
nicest frat boy you've ever met.
Exactly. You know, the more convincing relationship that we saw in this film was not between Chris Hemsworth and Natalie Portman, but between Chris Hemsworth and Stellan Skarsgård, which I never thought I would use the term token Norseman in a film to describe a film, but he has no reason to be in this film except to suddenly be sold on the myths of his childhood being true, and we see this play out with him and Thor essentially becoming drinking buddies, and I actually thought that was far more interesting than the romance that we saw.
Well, you're right on the money. I think that maybe he does have one reason to be in it. I recall in Good Will Hunting he came off as an academic, and so in this they give him the sole role of sewing up the plot hole with the physics explanation for how the bridge operates and how we'll ultimately somehow...
Oh, the Einstein-Rosen bridge, yes.
Yes, which we've heard about in possibly several other sci-fi films, at least Donnie Darko, and possibly also Sphere and Event Horizon.
I mean, it's the quasi-scientific way for things to get from point A to point B very fast. I mean, and I say quasi-scientific because I don't really know the science behind it.
But Hollywood needs to stop picking like whatever is the latest explanation for something that isn't quite proven and just using it to fill plot holes.
It's quantum teleportation, Nick. It's a sympathetic resonance in their frequencies. And
delightful.
You know. But yeah, I mean, we spend far too much time with Thor on Earth. And for most of that time, he doesn't have any powers. And that could be an interesting... sort of story. We've seen it done with Superman. In Superman 2, he loses his powers, and we see a little bit about what happens to Superman without powers. We even see what happens when he tries his hand at romance, tries his hand at being a human. But Thor isn't doing any of that. He's trying to prove himself worthy and get his powers back. And what do we see instead of rip-roaring superhero action? We see two separate scenes with him eating scrambled eggs. And that's it, you know?
We don't need to see Clash of the Cultures between these two civilizations. At one point, he He has coffee and he says, "What was that?" And he throws the glass to the ground.
He's like, I like this beverage. Another.
And tosses the glass to the ground, shattering it.
You know, I gave Chris Hemsworth a lot of credit on that line because everyone in my theater erupted, and I found, at least they did the first time they saw it in the trailer, and I found that line amusing. I found his whole demeanor amusing, but ultimately it added up to very little. But the other thing is, in addition to Asgard, this beautiful world that we see sketched out, we also get an entire team of superheroes, effectively. I mean, there are other deities, but I would say apart from I don't remember his name, the Watcher. Actor's name is Idris Elba. It's where is he? Oh, Heimdall. Okay, Heimdall. He's the Watcher. He guards the Rainbow Bridge. I quite like this performance from him. I'm a big fan of Idris Elba from The Wire, and he. He had just a very intimidating presence, and also the character design on the Watcher on Heimdall was just very interesting.
I agree. I think he was probably one of the more interesting characters because you see him be extremely loyal to Odin, and then actually do something that might be something against what Odin would immediately want him to do.
But
ultimately in service to him. So he's a true loyal sort of hero character. Operating outside the city. So if you really want to go into Greek mythology, he's the real hero, and then he lives outside the city protecting it from, you know, outside intrusion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And acting in what he believes to be the truest, best good for the city.
Yeah. I think the other superheroes had some potential. I think the only actor that I had heard of was Ray Stevenson, who I've quite enjoyed his work in Rome. I believe he was also in Punisher Warzone, which I have not seen. But he has a pretty interesting presence as kind of a sloppy warrior, and I think they really played that up to the maximum degree. He was basically playing Gimli in this film. I mean, he had a huge beard and he liked to eat a lot, but. But again, this is all we see basically one sequence with this team of heroes fighting, and it's kind of interesting, but it's all really, it's all very dark. This was in the Frost Giants realm. That whole sequence at the beginning just bored me to tears. I couldn't tell what the hell was going on. It was...
They imply a very deep connection from Battlefield victories of the past, and yet we have no real reason to buy into it or believe in it.
You know, I can accept that as long as we get some interesting action with this team working together. But we didn't get any of that. I mean, at one point they come to Earth to find Thor and bring him back, and they basically don't do anything. I mean, they are the only ones with powers left, and they do nothing with them.
But we got a joke about Renaissance fairs.
That's true. And that's basically all we got out of them.
Instead of LARPing, which would have been the more up to date cultural reference.
Oh, Nick. Well, I think there was just a great deal of wasted potential here. I mean, they created a pretty interesting world and a team of superheroes they could have done something with, and they did almost nothing with them. So,
what was that movie about the dragon? The cartoon, the animated movie. Sorry,
How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, I bought into that as more of a model of mythic Norse mythology than I did this movie.
Interesting. I mean, I think the world building on How to Train Your Dragon was definitely superior to what we saw here. But at the same time, we spent that entire movie in this fictional Viking village of Berk.
And that's so. One of the reasons why, you know, we had just going back to you're showing humans and you're showing other humans playing anthropomorphized deities. And so you're going to have a difficult time seeing a difference between the two because they look alike.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of something like some of the writings of Neil Gaiman, there's a book called American Gods, and the premise of this book is essentially that every god that has ever existed in mythology still exists and is real and is fueled by the belief that people have in them. So the more people believe in them, the more powerful they are. So as a result, the old-timey gods, the Egyptian gods and so forth, are kind of, you know, they're passé. Like, I think we actually meet Ra working as an undertaker and just a few other ones. I mean, Odin and Loki all make appearances in that book as well. But one thing that text did very well was we see them appearing human, but there's a sequence where... as the book puts it, the gods came out, and it just describes them as completely otherworldly. And I think that's a lot easier to play out in text because much of it takes place in the reader's imagination. But to buy the notion that even primitive cultures worshipped these people as gods, I have to see more than just them exhibiting superpowers. I mean, we get an allusion to that at the beginning of the film where they say, you know, this is not like Earth, mm-hmm. where you can conjure up some thunder and lightning and they'll worship you as a god. And I think that was just sort of a throwaway explanation for how they tie into our mythology and history. But it ultimately just felt pretty hollow.
Yeah. Speaking of throwaway, what did you think of Natalie Portman's role in this movie?
I think she had no reason to be in this movie.
I agree completely. I expected more based on seeing her in serious films recently. I was very disappointed by just all she did was play a giggly schoolgirl, essentially.
Yeah, and you know, I think that was mostly that was more a script problem than an acting problem. I mean, there's not really much for her to do with this role where she's playing a pretty unconvincing scientist. We don't really see her do anything except what's essentially storm chasing.
True, but from a marketing sense, if you're a serious actor and you put your name in a movie, like I'm sure she doesn't just need another paycheck. I'm using your name as sort of a way to judge the movie as to its worth. And so if you put your name on something, I'm going to judge it by your name as well, you know, along with the director, screenwriter, other things I hear. But so I was disappointed just because I thought she had taken a turn for serious acting.
Well, I think also with any tentpole release, I mean, in that sort of release, you can definitely see sort of the hand of the studio at work. And I think that you look at among the most successful superhero properties of all time, which I would say Spider-Man is probably the top of the game. What they see is what that film appeals to, or what appeal that film holds to mass audiences is partially in action and partially in romance. I mean, you need a convincing love interest, and I guarantee you that is what the studio said when they looked at whatever the original idea for this film was. You know, we need somebody on Earth for him to fall in love with. Now, that may or may not be the case. It's possible there was a love interest in the mix from the beginning, but whatever love story was meant to be told here, I think, was either left on the cutting room floor or was never there to begin with.
Yeah, them hanging out on the top of a RV or van or whatever in the middle of the desert at night just doesn't add up to a convincing reason for Thor to stay on Earth and defend it and choose it as his own. It's really sort of an insufficient.
It's enough for a one-night stand. It's not enough for a romance beyond the stars.
No, so. Beyond the heavens.
Well, I think with that, that pretty much brings us to the end of our discussion of Thor. But Nick, any final words? If anyone should see this movie?
Anyone who is from the Northern Realms themselves, Norway, Sweden, or cares about Norse mythology would probably enjoy seeing it. I certainly enjoyed seeing, it had some action elements. It had some, very visually engaging elements. And it also had some... I forgot to mention one thing real quick. When the bridge broke, having a bridge break between deities and humanity, that's just a wonderful theme. So, like, just to build it, working that in at the edge, I mean, pretty much every major religion has a bridge, there is now a gap between us and who we're supposed to be or who the gods are. So I thought that was an interesting...
Oh, it's just sort of an aspect of the mythology of all religions?
Yes. So I thought that was, I generalized it immediately, not having known a lot about Norse mythology going into this, but...
Yeah, my feeling watching this movie is that there was some intelligence that went into the construction of this film. It's just ultimately much of the film turned out to be a mess. And I think if we had spent less time on Earth, if we had stuck with this relatively interesting war and royal conflict in Asgard, I think this could have been a much better film. But that obviously would not have worked with all the necessary tie-ins to the Avengers film. So. You know, I think we just have to lament what might have been and hope maybe at some point in the future they make a Thor 2, which I would actually welcome if we're just revisiting this universe.
Yep, I would definitely watch that. I would look forward to another film in the franchise.
So I think with that will bring us to the end of our discussion. Thank you for visiting filmwalk.net and have a good night.